The Business on RTE Radio 1 with AIB. Whatever stage your business is at, there's always time to imagine sustainable, positive change. AIB, for the life you're after.
But first to a legendary Irish business that's about to make this appearance on Netflix.
Something better than before.
I, Sir Benjamin Lee Guinness, hereby give all my brewery concerns to my two sons, Edward and Arthur, jointly and equally.
We expected something more.
I feel it wise not to burden Benjamin and Anne with the temptations that come with fortune.
Do you really think you can just put it in a safe behind a painting, lock it up and...
The death of your father has served to poke a stick in a hornet's nest.
A gift from Mr. Guinness.
And you're gonna start a war.
From a representative of the Dublin poor.
High drama for the House of Guinness. As it happens, the prominent member of the family today, the Earl of Ivy, Arthur Edward Guinness, has just published a book, Guinness, A Family Succession, the true story of the struggle to create the world's largest brewery. We caught up with Arthur Guinness yesterday. He prefers to be called Edward or Ned. I first asked him what it was like growing up in the family home, Farm Lee, in the Phoenix Park.
It was exceptionally special. I was actually born in the house on the first floor, looking out onto the fountain pond at the back of the house. And it was remarkable. It was like a country childhood in Dublin. It was wilderness. It was had many elements of garden and covered area where we could play, helped in the with the cattle. We had a wonderful friendship, myself and my siblings, with the Fitzgerald family. Sean was the farm manager and became the estate manager and looked after Farm Lee latterly. And indeed, Sean also managed successfully to build an amazing Charolais herd, which my father was very proud of. And so we would take the cattle to the RDS for the spring show. And very often my father would gladly come back with some very, very wonderful cups and rosettes that he was most proud of through his partnership with Sean. And I spent my childhood naming the cattle. It was by order of alphabet each year. I never quite knew whether I was named Edward after historical purposes or whether I was named Edward after Edouard, the French imported bull that turned into the amazing sire of the Farm Lee Charolais herd, which came about in my earliest years.
Somebody planted that seed of doubt in your mind, I'd say, at some point.
He was a mighty figure.
And the family, when they bought that estate in the 1800s, they were into hunting, and they used to have sort of metal stags as targets.
We had metal stags in the woodlands, which I think, utilising the engineers who built the narrow gauge railway around the brewery, built these metal full size stags that someone would push down a hill and persons with rifles would take aim at. And
so they were sort of on rails.
They were on rails.
And then they'd have a shot of them.
They would have a shot of them as they ran left to right or right to left.
Were they all gone in your day, or did you see them in action?
We never had the use of the light railway in my day, but they sat in the middle of the woods like wonderful objects from a foregone era. Some glass clay pigeons, which were extraordinary. They used to catapult. We had boxes and boxes of them in the basement.
Arthur Edward Guinness. What a name in Ireland, particularly if you're Arthur Guinness, but you're known as Edward or Ned within the family. Were you not tempted to go with the Arthur Guinness? It would have been good even as a chat-up line.
I get enough eyebrows at passports, which has my full name in already. And unfortunately, I never, when visiting a public house, if anyone discovers, I'm always the one buying the pints. No, far better with Ned.
So do you think the passport control people sometimes wonder, is it true?
Well, luckily, a few people enjoy a pint, and I normally get a big smile. It's a positive.
Some people carry a name and it can be a bit of a burden having a very famous name. But Arthur Guinness in Ireland, I want to just go back to the start and talk a bit about the man himself who set up the brewery. First of all, he wasn't from a particularly wealthy family.
No, he started off, he was the oldest son, and he started off, his father was a land agent and worked away for a prosperous clergyman. His father had many children, as was the case. So I think Arthur, the founder of the brewery, had quite a lot of responsibility because being the oldest son and the guy who became adult foremost, was expected to contribute from an early age.
If you look at the early days of the brewery in Arthur Guinness, it wasn't exactly all plain sailing, was it? There was an issue around access to free water at the site.
There was a remarkable dispute that lasted 9 years. When Arthur had bought the brewery site, it was promised to him with a free supply of water. But in those days, the Corporation of Dublin received quite a considerable amount of rent or taxes from supplying water. So their officials came along and decided that they would block the access that Arthur had. And he came out, he grabbed a pickaxe from one of the labourers that perhaps was in that body of corporation officials, and he used a string of expletives and told them to go away. And it took him the best part of a decade to go through a legal process, but he ended up winning the right to carry on with the right, I think, was extended to almost 5,000 years of free water supply.
So he was a pretty feisty character then.
He must have been, and it's just one of those, a thing that perhaps could have altered history, at least for my family, had it gone the other way. Who knows?
And the original lease was for a very long period anyway on the site.
Absolutely, for thousands of years.
And so, does that mean then the 5,000 years free water, is it still free?
This is a question. The nitty gritty. I should think there's a healthy alliance between the Guinness's brewery and the public water company. the details of which are unknown to me.
Commercially sensitive. going back to Arthur Guinness as well, the brewing connection, his mother's family were brewers, is that right?
That's right. They were. And indeed, of course, brewers in those days, they were very often publicans. The publicans were brewing their own. And that was something that Arthur spotted. If he could focus on the quality of the product, and of course we're talking way before refrigeration and all the clever science that we have, sterilisation and so on, and alleviate the publicans left, right and centre, very many of them, most of them were brewing their own, to convince them to actually buy his.
And at the time, it was a great business, not least because drinking water wasn't particularly safe. And a lot of people drank large amounts of beer because it was just safer.
You're absolutely right. There was disease that was borne by water, and beer was considered a safe option.
How much beer were people drinking back then?
A legitimate Dublin historian spotted and estimated that it must have been 14 pints of exceptionally strong beer, up to 14% in alcohol, that the labourers building Christchurch Cathedral consumed daily.
It's a wonder it's so straight or is still standing.
Well, they did some great work, and yes, testimony to strength of the human endeavour, you might say.
One of the other things, I mean, when you go back to the start of the brewery, 1759, so you're looking at the early days of the 1760s and through to the end of the 18th century. Dublin was a very different place at that time, and it's something that you touch on in the book. Tell us a bit about the Dublin of that period.
It was a much smaller city. It was between 150 maybe and 250,000 people. And the streets were narrow. It was much smaller. It didn't extend like it does, of course. And it had a huge poverty. It was considered to be one of the poorest cities in Western Europe, alongside considerable wealth.
because Dublin was second city of the empire in the 18th century, there was a huge amount of commercial wealth there mixed in with that poverty.
Well, that's right. And the agriculture was very, very important to the Irish economy. It had its own parliament, which did get disbanded. And unfortunately, those years after the dissolution of the Irish parliament, it meant that many of the decision makers who had considerable stakes in the nation went over to the UK, and it meant that that the place became more impoverished.
Politics was always going to be front and centre in Irish social and economic life at that time. The rising of 1798, where did the Guinness family and Arthur in particular, where did the politics sit in all of that?
Well, we had been very passionately in favour of Catholic emancipation, which was slow to formalise, but nonetheless it had. And then after the emancipation, Daniel O'Connell, who had been a great family ally and friend, he decided to take a more radical approach and with the United Irishmen. And us, we were saying, listen, we need to work from within the establishment of the day to convince the British that the lot of Ireland should be favoured.
But 1798, the United Irishmen Rising, was a pivotal point in history. And for the family who had supported greater rights for Ireland and Henry Grattan and so forth, they didn't side with the United Irishmen in the Rising. And there was a backlash, wasn't there?
Well, I have a suspicion that if you think of the markets that Guinness served, the commercial interests, from about 1840, there was more Guinness exported to Britain, consumed in the UK, as we now know it, than consumed in Ireland. Of course, Ireland being a smaller marketplace, a smaller population. So it was that, I think, pragmatic reality that Guinness's was already an international, if you know, it wasn't, we weren't a different country then, but we might look at it from today as being a very, very reliant on what we might consider foreign marketplaces, which in those days comprised the British Empire.
So the family would not have had a lot of truck with an armed insurrection in 1798. And there was some suggestion then that the family had actually betrayed some of the United Irishmen, and there was a backlash. At one stage, there was a pamphlet after the Rising which talked about detestable traitors, and it put up a list of them. And one of them was the Guinness family. And it said something to the effect of this product should not be consumed by any patriotic Irishmen, which sounds very ironic as things have turned out afterwards. But that was a real backlash, wasn't it?
There was a backlash, and some of it was based by good old commercial rivalry. There was some local brewers who happened to be Catholic and happened to purport stories about the Guinnesses, us Guinnesses, that were incorrect, and although they were very strongly denied by my family. We put adverts in proclamations in newspapers stating that under no circumstance had we betrayed Irish interests and furthered causes like the Orange cause.
But ironically, some members of staff, people would have been attacked even for delivering Guinness in the aftermath of 1798.
There had been instances of unfortunate assaults, and it must have been of great worry. But I think the Guinness of the day, we decided that these were more commercial interests that acting against us than ones of sectarianism.
The Netflix series focuses on the succession of Benjamin Lee Guinness. He controversially gave most of the brewery to two of his four children. Is that right?
Well, that's right. The brothers Arthur and Edward, my direct forebear, they got 50% of the brewery each. And then after a few years, Edward bought his older brother out.
But there had been a bit of rivalry then between the two of them and their wives when it came to throwing big parties and social events.
Well, yeah. I wonder whether the media of the day was making tensions where none existed. I have a suspicion that they got on generally all right.
The Netflix series makes it all very dramatic.
Well, I think it must be dramatic. It really has to have us on the edge of our seats. I'm so looking forward to seeing it. But I think it is based on a family. I don't know how much reality it will have.
You seem unsure about whether it'll tell the same story, basically, is it?
Television must select very, very tightly what it chooses to portray. And I think it will necessarily select narrowly from the 233 years that the Guinnesses have been brewing in Dublin.
And in the 19th century, the peerage within the family really came along, didn't it? And the title of, I think at one stage it was Viscount Ivy, and you have the title, the Earl of Ivy. So that really emanated around that time. And there was a bit of sport in the press at the time. Somebody referred to one newspaper, The Truth, this would have been in 1891, had a bit of a cut, and it said, "The new lord is celebrated for the excellence of his stout, for the munificent gifts of a quarter of a million towards the better housing of the poor of Dublin and London, and for possessing a 3,000 guinea sofa." Yeah. There was a bit of a sting in the tail on that one, Edward.
Well, it must have been a very comfortable sofa. I wonder who's got it now.
Could be worth a lot more than 3,000 if it's still intact. And when you look then at the family's relationship with business and with the sort of social and political life in Ireland, where do you see the identity of the family sitting? And what about your own identity today?
Well, I'm solely Irish. Britain has put up with me for a considerable period of time in my adult life. I went to Castleknock National School and then a wonderful school in Bray, just south of Dublin, which is now no longer open. And I was then went over to the UK for the second part of my schooling, aged 13 and onwards. It's so easy to go backwards and forwards, so I've been going backwards and forwards ever since.
And when you're back here, you're no longer staying in Farm Lee with the state and all of that, owning Farm Lee. So where do you stay in Ireland?
I have the privilege of an access to a wonderful property in the Liberties. And I've really been enjoying the Liberties for the life and the soul. It is the life and the soul of Dublin. And I listen to the bells of whether it's one cathedral or the other. It's the people that make the community tick. And there are some wonderful people who are incredibly community minded.
And what about the Ivy Markets and the fact that it has been derelict for a very long time, and you would have been involved with others in trying to ensure that was no longer the case? How do you feel about that?
Well, you know, I'm really, really looking forward to Dublin Corporation, DCC, taking the great step of leadership and, along with national government, putting in a considerable sum to secure the shell of the building. And so it will commence quite soon, very soon. We hope it's going to be this year, not next, that the shell will be secured. It'll take 18 months or 2 years. And then there'll be a public consultation, hopefully alongside the renovation. And, of course, the return to social purpose. There is no point in having beautiful buildings without purpose. Edward Cecil gifted the markets to the city of Dublin, the people of Dublin, on the back of some very good things that he had going at the time, where people could wash their clothes, where they could clean themselves, and where they could trade undercover. I have some extraordinary photographs of that part of Dublin where the children are running around on the streets barefooted, in dirty clothes, with the traders obviously trading in all weathers. And it was a very different sort of Dublin than the one that we have today. Edward Cecil, it was on his route from Stevens's Green, his townhouse, to the brewery where he worked, and some of the worst deprivation, social deprivation, in anywhere in Europe or elsewhere in the world, it was evident to him and he took action.
Edward Cecil Guinness was very well known for taking care of staff and looking after them, their interests. What kinds of things did he do for them?
You know, he developed a whole system of assistance. It was not only the staff, but it was their families. He looked after them. They had a very strong and active focus on recreation for the children. The medical facilities extended to the families from a very early time.
Maternity services.
Maternity services, yes, right, midwifery generally. And then the housing. He was very concerned that Dubliners didn't have decent housing stock. And so to this day, the institution that he set up, the Ivy Trust, it provides dwellings for whole communities dotted about Dublin city centre and the counties around Dublin.
Was there marriage counselling in there as one of the services?
There was marriage counselling, and there was refuges if women should be subjected to domestic violence. One or two family members, interestingly enough, really took a very close interest in the welfare of women, homeless women and unemployed women, where women were housed and given skills provision.
And when you look, Edward, at the Guinness family and that legacy and what you've learned about them and that sense of responsibility that was there among quite a lot of them around the social responsibility, not just for the people who work for them, but for the city that they inhabited and the city that they were so commercially successful in. How do you think that compares with today and very big corporations and their sense of social responsibility?
Well, I'm very proud of the forebears for taking such a huge interest in interests that were far wider than their commercial concerns. And really, if you think of the provision of subsidised housing for those who cannot afford, or services of health and welfare for the people in the Dublin area, and really thinking that the ecosystem of Guinness's was exceptionally rich from the perspective of so many aspects of people's welfare were looked after.
Do you think it's more narrow today?
I think we've become more narrow as a generalism. I really think we have.
Where's your own politics these days? Who are you attached to a political party or support a political party?
Do you know, I'm a political butterfly. I have voted. I think it's important for us in a democratic system to exercise our right to vote. I feel very strongly about that. But I really select my candidate in each election, or no candidate in an election in some instances.
So you voted differently?
Absolutely. I have never been a politically card-carrying party member of any persuasion.
So that you're open to anything then, are you, in terms of candidates?
I like to think that I exercise discretion, selectively.
Have you ever moved outside the establishment in some of those voting patterns, though?
I have. When I have been particularly fed up, and when I was based in the UK, I have even voted for fags, booze and Skittles, because I was obviously protesting.
Okay. We'll leave it there on that note. It's a fantastic book, Guinness, A Family Succession. Arthur Edward Guinness, Earl of Ivy, thank you very much for joining us on the programme.
My pleasure, Richard. Thank you for having me.